So now I wanted to take a look at the Babli for her presentation of Shlakos. Before we actually start to read, would any of you think at all about the structure of the Babli Sugya and what it might reflect? I'm talking about particularly the first half, you know, the first Amud plus. I think when you step back and look at it, it becomes, this is a phenomenon which is very common, I believe, in the Babli, and it becomes very, very clear in the Sugya. And you can see the Rishonim are not thinking about this structural question, so in their discussion of how to paskin, it lurks in the background a little bit. Fine, did you think about this at all?
No.
Okay, so I'm not going to tell you the answer yet. We're going to read. Let's first read, and then we will move from there. Eitan, can I ask you to?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You still have, hold on. You haven't gotten the Gemara Brachos. Okay, hold on. Let me give you mine. And the one that's here. Brachos, so it's a little easier to.
That's yours.
That is mine. This was a gift from the Shir probably 15 years ago or so. Well, yeah. Okay, so we're. I'm sorry? Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. The Ahi Rakas only just related. Tani Rakas is going to be the past. Not past and Ishtana Aleho, or Ahi Rakas is not Mishan Ishtana Aleho.
Okay, so the way it's formulated here is that just as the Ahi Rakas to Omer, well, appears are it's not Omer, Bari Priya Adama, puts Menachas, Shalapas to Omer. So the Gemara here makes it's an interesting kind of comparison because it's a comparison across lines. In other words, what was a more compelling comparison is would be to say that Peiros Haaretz, if they were Nishtanu, Ayidei Haor, they are still Borei Pri Ha'adama. In other words, they don't lose their bracha. This is very much like we saw in I think it was in the beginning of the Yerushalmi, that from the fact that it says Al Peiros Ha'ilan Mahu Omer Borei Pri Ha'etz Chutz Min Ayayin, so from that that you see from that Shemen is Borei Pri Ha'etz. How do you know what does it mean Shemen is Pri Ha'etz? Well, Shemen is Peiros Ilan, and it's not wine, so it must be for grapes. But more importantly, it shows you that even though you pulverize the grapes and you have turned them into a substance that doesn't look like the grape, it doesn't look like the pre
ha'eitz.
It's still called Peiros Ha'aretz. Peiros Ilan, in this case, Peiros Ha'aretz. And here, one could have said it should have been sufficient to argue not so much from the comparison of Yerakos to pass, but from Peiros Ha'aretz to pass. And once you say Peiros Ha'aretz, which are Adama, just because Nishtana Yidei Or doesn't mean they lose their bracha, so too, Yerakos also don't lose their bracha. Okay. So, but on the surface, it's not a great hekesh. You know what a hekesh is? What's a hekesh? I know, it's obviously a trick question. What is a hekesh? When everybody knows what hekesh is, but hekesh is a technical term. Some of you may have learned, well, we will, God willing, get to it, Bekias in the third Torah. Smuchim. You know what smuchim is? What's smuchim, Jake? What?
I'm scared, but when two things are next to each other, you draw.
Yes, but you have to be more specific. So is a hekesh. In fact, there's a Rashi on today's Daf Yomi. Actually, it's not. I'm just 14 or 15 days behind. Well, I did several this morning on the treadmill. So whatever Daf it is, around Samach Gimel Adalid, beginning of Meruba, Rashi makes this comment about a Hekesh, what a Hekesh is not. A Hekesh is not a Svara in comparison. That's not what you were saying. That's a Binyanav. A Binyanav is that we have these two principles, and just as one, this idea applies to, the other one also makes sense it applies to. So that's not a Hekesh, that's a Binyanav. What's the difference between a hekesh and smuchim? It's a technical difference, but it means everything in the world. Lewis? Two things in a pasuk versus two things in two separate pasukim. The classic case of smuchim, which I don't know if it's quoted in the third parak when they talk about Tzvilas Balkeri, and but it's from the Gemara Nivamos, which is Lo Sobah Sha'nei Semer Fish Kim Yachtov, and that is next to Gedilim Pasalach, and from that you learn that the Mitzvah Tasei Tzitzis is Docha Lo Sasei Kelayim. That's Luchan. A Hekesh can be explicit or it can be not explicit, as you have. You have explicit hekeshim in the Torah, which probably don't even require two psukim next to one another. Asher yiram mishor zevach hashlamin. So when you have a pasuk that says you do this like the other thing, that's pretty explicitly a hekesh. But even two things next to one another within a pasuk can be considered a hekesh. So here, while I'm borrowing, I know we don't darshan. Well, most of us don't darshan. That'll be true. We don't darshan mishnayos the way we darshan. Even though the Mishnah is a text, it's an oral text, and the Gemara does sometimes darshan it almost like you would darshan scripture, like Mishnah say relamali, and sometimes they'll say it's to teach you this, so it's almost like darshan pasuk. Sometimes they'll say that Rebbe was eventually taught another Mishnah, but Mishnah was Azam and Koma. The original Mishnah remained in place, which is a little bit like Milsa Dasi the Kalachomer Tarach the Kasav Lakra. It's actually close, more an analogy than you might realize. So here they're sort of crossing clauses and saying that pas yirakos have the same idea that mishdana yedeha or and therefore what? Therefore, now the analogy is not exactly a perfect analogy either. Why? The Rishonim all say that for three different reasons. Shimmy?
Because pas bracha does change.
Yeah, pas bracha gets where they upgrade. It moves to at least premium seating, if not first class. Whereas I thought I'd even argue moves to first class because Hamotzin al Hanaritz is a very powerful bracha for pottering things. Whereas by Shakos, they argue with Yurakos, if you cook them, they remain in the same category. Okay, so based upon this, go ahead. Amar.
Amar of Nai, initially the Abai, there was a Meris, Shakos was already in the land where you'd be at Amar.
Okay. And notice the parentheses. Yeah, so I don't remember. I think that's not in most of the Kisvayad. That's here just an observation for the Talmudists who are looking for understanding how things are comprised. Firstly, some of you might have figured out, most of you looked at the sheet. Does anyone know what the Han code is? It's pretty obvious, I think. But in case you didn't, in case you weren't thinking about it, do you think I'm not a very artistic person. I'm not the kind of person who likes to color things. Unless it's useful for understanding things. So you'll notice that I switch back and forth between fonts. Why do I switch back and forth between... What?
I was going to say that, but I thought it was...
Once, if it switches once in the little document, that's one thing.
When
it
switches...
Yeah, I didn't... Oh, I lamed tzchus there. You could have felt worse. You could have thought I was like smoking something while I was doing it. So, Ronnie, what am I doing here? You! Ephraim, what am I doing here? There are three fonts. There's Times New Roman, there's Courier, the ugliest font ever created, but very useful because it's not proportionally spaced. So each character takes the same amount of things. No kerning, no proportional spacing, and no kerning. Okay, I have to at least show the computer guys that I know something.
I see one thing.
And then one second. And then there is this, what I bolded is the is Calibri or something like that. It's whatever it shows up as in Hebrew. So what are the fonts? Brian, explain. Yeah, the courier font, which you can see the first line because it's a line from the Kofi Mishnah, is a Tana. It means it's a Tana Itik in its layer. And the regular Times in Roman is the stem of the Gemara, and the bold Calibri is what are appear to be Amorei statements. Now you'll notice that the opening part of the Gemara is stem, but it should highlight to you a particular point. What was the where did the Gemara get that from? Ma Pashin Ishtami Adeya Or Avyakra Stamish Ishtami Adeya Or. What's the first thing that happens? You're like the ringer. What?
Where to get the
chronologically speaking, what's happened in the composition here? Ephraim?
We're putting our conclusions first.
We're putting our conclusions first, is correct. What happened was we have an Amoraic statement in the name of Abai Zosomer Shlokos Mevorachel Abari Pri Adama. Now, you look at that and you think, what is Abai talking about? How do you look at the Mishnah says, Ala Yurakos, Omer Bar Kadama? That's very nice. It's nice that Yurakos rhymes with Shlakos, and it's nice that Yurakos can turn into Shlakos. But how do you know that you make Bar Kadama on Shlakos, which are Yurakos that were Nishtalku? And the answer is, from the Hekesh of Yurakos, Domi the Path. That's the Gemara's, in all probability, that is the Gemara deconstructing what is the reasoning behind Abaye's statement. That's all. It doesn't change the meaning of anything except that, and I'm not here going to pose, what possibility does it open up, which I'm not going to open up because I don't really have a better alternative. What theoretical possibility exists once I make that, posit that? It is conceivable, I have no alternatives, I'm not suggesting it in this case, that there's a different interpretation of Abaye. In other words, that opening part of the Gemara is the interpretation of what Abaye's diuk was. It is conceivable that someone could come along, there could be a sugya elsewhere in Shas, there could be Yerushalmi somewhere, not with Abaye because he doesn't appear in the Yerushalmi, or you could have a svara as to a different interpretation or understanding of Abaye's statement. I am obviously, both for intellectual reasons and for spiritual reasons, both in humility, don't run to embrace the last one unless something is so obviously compelling. The first two are, by all traditional accounts, acceptable modes of interpretation. I think the third one is not verboten, but nonetheless, that's what makes academic Talmud so controversial / interesting. It also makes a lot of it speculative, but you should be considering that possibility in your head. You should, again, there's nothing, I'm not going to say any chidushim here, nothing comes out of this, but you should understand how the sugya is being composed. Okay, that's step one. Okay, continue. Okay, now that line, some of you might have noticed, Rashi doesn't have, if you look in the Hagosim, Rashi doesn't have, because Rashi says, he has Mishum Rabbeinu, he doesn't have Umanu Rav, identifying who Rav is. I will tell you, every one of the manuscripts has it. And it actually, it is important, not whether it is or isn't the manuscripts, it actually matters whether it's Rav and Shmuel in the next one. Yes, sir?
Does Rashi have a different, because like a bunch of his comments here feel really obvious, and I'm not sure if he was like missing words.
Well, that's the point. When Rashi writes Mishum Rabbeinu, when he writes Rav, and when he later says Mishum Shmuel, that tells you, that's how that goes for Tzionim. People knew that Rashi didn't have Umanu Rav, Umanu Shmuel, because otherwise why would Rashi be filling in what the Gemara says? You work backwards for that. So it happens to be in this case, it won't matter that much in the Kisviyat, all have it. There's no exception to that. But nonetheless, clearly Rashi didn't have that identifying Rabbeinu. Because Rav Chisda also is a Talmud of Shmuel, and Rav Nachman is, we'll quote things in the name of Rav. So it could have been the other way, or it could have been the same Rabbeinu when they were, but nonetheless. So he says, okay. So he quotes a machlokus between Chachmei Bavel and Chachmei Eretz Yisrael as to what bracha you make on shlokos. He hasn't yet spoken about which type of vegetables, right? There are different kinds of vegetables, right? If you have potatoes and you boil potatoes, so they're good to eat. If you try to eat potatoes raw, well, I don't suggest you try to eat potatoes raw. On the other hand, if you take lettuce, truly irakos, you take lettuce and you can eat it raw. I don't recommend that you boil lettuce because it tastes awful when you boil, at least in my opinion. In fact, when you run it under hot water, it does awful things to lettuce. So, Boaz, you're going to dissent here?
No, it doesn't taste
good. It's awful. And lettuce is not generally the tastiest thing in the world, but you put it in hot water and it's just... Okay, so he doesn't say what type of shlokas he's talking about, but there's a shlokas hachmei baba hachmei eretz Yisrael. Now, Vani Omer, and who's talking? Rav Chisda's talking, right? As first he said that Rav Osenu said to Bavel, he quoted Rav as Shlakos is Bert Adama. Then he quoted Rav Osenu in the name of Rav Yochanan that it's Shehakol, and he said, Vani Omer. Okay, so he says, this is very interesting, and the Rashba talks about this at great length. Well, I'm not going to talk about it right now, because I want to just focus today on the structure of the sugya. But he says that anything which is Bari Pri Adama, then if you boil it, you make a shakal. Anything which is shahakal, and you boil it, you make a Bari Pri Adama. Obviously, what is he describing in terms of vegetables here? I don't mean specifics, but conceptually. How it's usually eaten. And there's an assumption behind this. Well, I mean, he doesn't say that. But what kinds of irakos do you make shakal on? The Mishnah said you make bar kodama. Jake? Yeah, if they're inedible raw. There are lots and lots of candidates to this. Most, I would say that most vegetables are inedible raw. It's usually mostly the leafy vegetables are edible raw. I guess some gourds are, because cucumbers are gourds, but most other squash you wouldn't eat. Try to eat raw, I think. You can eat zucchini. Zucchini you can eat raw. Boas?
Is it inedible or not normally eaten?
I think we have to put him on a list for the end of the year tasting. Right, we're gonna ask your opinion. You gotta have some raw potato, some raw squash, you know.
Before
part of,
you mentioned, we spoke about leeks and garlics.
We haven't spoken about leeks and garlics. The Gemara has, but we get. They seem to have a very different conception. But the Gemara is Pelet in general. Would you say, once you've raised the issue, can you eat onions raw? The answer is you can eat it in small quantities or mix it into other things like salads. It requires unusual intestinal and otherwise fortitude. Okay, you would agree with that, Boaz? To eat large quantities of onion raw.
Maybe their onions were different.
So this is an important question that I kind of wondered about. Has there been something in the breeding of onions since? Because today, onions are most certainly edible cooked. Now, I don't know about boiling onions, that I would say, but grilling onions, that's unbelievable. You want to taste really good onions, you can grill onions, you can fry onions. It doesn't work so well. I don't know how well it works when you put it in water, although the Balei Tosfos do recognize in soup, it's fine. If you put it in chicken soup, the onions are also delicious. I couldn't see, like, if you take, there used to be, for Teaneck people, there used to be a long time ago a restaurant called Mabat Steakhouse. It's long gone, I think. But they used to serve, like, kind of as desserts at the end of the meal. They would just wrap the onions in foil and grill them. And they're delicious. Once they're cooked enough, onions turn sweet. And they're really good. So it's true, I couldn't imagine actually boiling an onion, but I can't imagine a boiled onion is that much worse than eating a raw onion in any quantity, right? Right, it's true, I guess that's not terrible, yeah. What? Yeah, it's more edible than raw onions. Yeah, I guess it is. So.
So
that's one of the issues. Well, we're going to have to talk about some of those details, but I think that raw potatoes are essentially inedible.
Poisonous.
Are they really?
Maybe.
I'm not so sure about that.
What's
that?
Definitely wild.
I know, unfortunately, in the family and the stories, my wife's grandfather, who hid from the Nazis, you know, for several days at one point, he was hiding. And all he had, I think, was raw potatoes. Anyway, then again, he was a pretty hardy individual, as was most of the people who survived. So I don't think that they're poisonous, but I think we would consider them generally inedible. I don't know how the body can also, you know, potatoes happen to be not the processed form of potatoes, but like baked potatoes happen to be one of the most nutritious foods. Like if you're looking for food that might contain almost all the nutrients you need, that might be one of them, but I don't know if the body can handle them raw, and it certainly doesn't taste. I mean, if you try eating a potato that's undercooked, you understand, you can only imagine it's raw. So, but right now, we don't know, you know, so right now, FISC has established that there are things that you make a shahakal on when they're raw, and things that you make hadama at the raw, and that when you cook it, the bracha flips. Now, what is the FISC doing functionally within the sugya, within this discussion of Amoraim? So he's engaged in Valach Tavitrachav. He's Otsa Shalom Vimrola. He's making peace between the two shitas. So in other words, there's really no machlokas, Rav and Shmuel versus Rav Yochanan. Each one is talking about a different kind of thing. It's like Mar Amar Chada, Umar Amar Chada. Okay, so now the Gemara gets focused on this question. Vishlama.
Vishlama goes to the Shaka, the Vimrola, the Shaka,
the Vikara. Three things here. Just by the way, as a fun note for those, there's no need. If you're really interested, you can look at, and we have to print a couple more versions of the critical edition. There's no need for you to check it. I check it because in case there's anything funny. This is a case where it's not meaningful, but you have like three or four different orders of these three items in the Kisveyat, which is a more interest of a question of that oral transmission of the text originally. Why was there such relative sloppiness? Subsequently, it doesn't matter. But what are these three things anyway? Krava is cabbage, and silka are beets, and kara are gourds. Okay, I'm pretty sure that beets are radishes you can eat raw. I don't know about beets. Beets don't look edible raw. I don't like them. I don't like them. I don't like them cooked either. But what's that?
You can try. They're not great. But, like, you can. I've had raw beef before.
Okay. All right. We'll have the face off when we have the food testing. Okay. You're
not great.
But klava cabbage. That's an interesting question. I don't know if you how well cabbage. Can you think of a time? Remember, a coleslaw is at least marinated.
Red cabbage is salad part.
No, I eat raw cabbage.
A straight. Yeah, you can. You can. It's a little bit. Yes. Well, no. The question is, would you make it the bit? Would you? In other words, look, onions you can eat in a salad too raw. The question is, would you make the salad mostly out of cabbage? How well would that go? Okay. I hear. I could see. Shimmy?
You keep saying that krava is like done and stuff. Maybe it's not actually what we think it is.
I know, as tempted as I am to hear that, Shimmy, everybody assumes it's such, and I don't know how to explain it. We discussed that when we did the sugi at the end of the parak early in the last semester. The Rabbi Akiva said, "Afilu achal shelak v'umazono." But it's hard to imagine. Shelak is not, the Gemara says it's krav, but shelak means roasted, boiled vegetables. He's not thinking about potatoes, because potatoes is a new world crop, right? He's not talking about maize, because maize is a new world crop. So what things that we would call yirakos, corn is not a vegetable. Corn is a grain, but maybe me and one person will think of corn as a vegetable. Because you make adam on it, so it's a vegetable. Ditto for potatoes. Potatoes are not a vegetable. And they're that people will call because, in the Reagan administration, they wanted to tell you that ketchup was a vegetable. Yeah. Ketchup. A small amount of tomatoes, mostly sugar. It's an excellent vegetable. Sugar's a vegetable. Sugar can.
Yeah, hey, didn't we do that last
Sugar's
time?
A grass, but fine.
Sugar beets then.
So they say that these three are vegetables. That way, cabbage very commonly is cooked in some way, whether it's marinated, whether you like make stuffed cabbage, whether you make roast. My wife sometimes makes roast cabbage for Shabbos. So all of those things, it certainly you see why they would have said that it's not edible raw. You make when it's raw, you make a shaka. I'm saying it's not edible. You make a shaka when it's raw, but when you cook it, you make adama. Ella. It is a very strange question when you think about it for a second. Why? Yeah, you can't. The Rashba points this out, and he's going to go back and explain what the Gemara is really driving. It's not our issue right now. Most vegetables are edible. You think you may call adama, right? So you certainly there's no shortage of vegetables you can think about, and these I have to admit, and based upon our prior discussion, are pretty strange candidates to choose. They're strange candidates because we would say they're not so edible raw, but they're definitely edible when cooked. So I don't know, did they have, were they somehow different? Tume and karte. Tume is shum, is garlic, and karte is leeks. Or you know what leeks are? What's that? Well, they're not exactly green onions. They're like...
No, green onions are scallions.
Well, yes, green onions are scallions. Leeks are like scallions that grew next to a nuclear power plant. They're like leeks are scallions on steroids. When you look at them, the truth is all onions. If you leave onions around, eventually they send up a shoot. Like if you leave the onions around a little too long, and that's kind of what the leeks look like, where the scallions
look like. They don't have like cucumbers or something. I feel like garlic and leeks is a very interesting choice for.
They are the same family, but I don't think I've ever seen garlic other than in the bulb. And again, I don't know what you're being buying in the store. Right, but I don't know exactly what leeks look like or scallions for that matter when they're growing from the
way I. A lot of other vegetables that are adama, and then if you cook them, they would be like shahako. I feel like leeks and garlic are very interesting ones to choose.
Again, I think you just don't know enough about their setting, their reality. Okay, so the bottom line, the Gemara says that we can explain our fist there. We have examples of things that really are supposed to be in cooked, and really examples of things that are really supposed to be in raw. Fine, that was a chistus drasha. Next.
Doris of Nachman, Vishum, Rabbeinu, Umanu, Shmuel, Shlok is the Varchalayim, Barabi Adama, Bechavirinu, Hayorin, and Eretz Israel, Umanu, Ua, Mishmeder, Yochan, and Shlok is the Varchalayim, Shakali, and Bar.
Okay, so it's essentially the exact same report other than Rav and Shmuel, being substituted for one another, but fine.
Vani Omer, Nemafokishnri.
Ooh, okay. So here, Rav Chista took one approach, Rav Nachman says, I think it's a Machlokas. And he thinks it's a machlokas hatanai.
Vitanya. Vitanya yotzin gerakech hashorui ugevusho shalom imoach tiver rebbeir.
So what mitzvah are we talking about here?
Matzah.
So you can have a rakik, which is some type of a dough that was baked, meaning a matzah. Our matzahs are very, very plain, but matzah just means flour and water that you don't let come from it. And that's not that hard to make in lots of different shapes, too. So you can be yotze if you soak the matzah, which you might do for somebody who has trouble chewing, and even if you cook it, provided that it's not nimoach. If it is nimoach, why can't you be yotze with it? Shouldn't it?
It's not matzah.
What does that mean? There are two possibilities, two obvious possibilities. What?
Also,
it may not be lechem anymore. There are three possibilities. What's that? No. We don't allow the brachos in the shir. Okay?
Yeah.
Once it's been baked, no, I mean, we don't allow for the possibility that the brachos is a concern in the shir.
I'll take it.
Okay. So, there are three possibilities in the Rishonim. One possibility is that it's no longer lechem. Second possibility is that it's no longer oni. And third possibility, the Rabbi Yehuda quotes that from Rachmei Tzarfas. It's not at least under our Tosfos on the page. I didn't look in Tosfos Rosh or Tosfos Rabbi Yehuda. But that's what Rabbi Yehuda quotes from Rachmei Tzarfas, that it's not lechem only anymore. And the position that he quotes from some, that so it's, some say it loses its source of pas, it's not lechem, some say it's not lechem only, and some say you need tam matzah, which is a little bit difficult because that seems to be about Chok Tzari Shonim. Tam moro you definitely need, tam matzah you might not need. Okay. So it says that you can yotze with these things, provided it's not nimoach. Now, I presume for Rabbi Meir, by the way, the obvious candidate of those three, and they don't say that for Rabbi Meir, I think they say it for Rabbi Yosei. The reason why that it's a revushal is one of those three reasons. For Rabbi Meir, shelo nimoach almost certainly would have to be because it lost its tzuras hapas, because I presume that it is no more or less lechamoni whether it's nimoach. If it's lechem only when you cook it, then it's lechem only just because it dissolved. It's just it's lechem only, it's not lechem. And it's hard to imagine that the tam changes so much. I understand the tam changes big time from when you take the matzah solid, dry, when it's baked, and you boil it. I understand that makes a big change in the tam, but that it changes so much from the tam that you boil it till it's nimoach, unless you say that you boil it so much that makes such a big difference, that seems less likely. The discussion in Rishonim is really within Rabbi Yosei, why are you not Yosei with Mahushal? So it's either not lechem, it's not oni, or it's no tam matzah. Okay, Rabbi Yosei Omer. Okay, now, I want to go on a 2-minute excursus here, because this is a lot of fun. The Uraim, Rabbi Lezer Mimetz, Rabbi Nutam's Talmud, says based upon this brisa that on Shabbos yesh bishul acharatia, meaning that if you take your matzah or your challah or your water challah and you want to dip it in your soup, so he says even in the klisheni there's a concern. That's a different consideration of Shabbos. What's called kaliyah bishul, but let's say in kli rishon, let's say you want to make matzah balls with your challah in the soup that's still in the pot. Well, let's say it doesn't matter one way or the other. You take it off the fire. Let's say. But a klivishon is still mavashim. So the Uraim says it's also to do that. Ah, but there's a rule in bishal chavishal. Like one of the things you know, when your cholent is in danger of drying out and burning, what do?
Water.
You pour water from the kettle, not just stem water. No, if you pour water in it, that's bishal in the water on Shabbos.
Yeah.
Yes, but the point is if you have a hot water kettle, you can take hot water, and for the Ramaz, as long as for the Rahaber, as long as it's Yad Soledes, and for the Ramaz, as long as it's not standing the Gamre, at that point, it's still Mavushal, the hot water, and you just put it into your cholent, so the cholent doesn't burn. Now, you decide you want to make matzah balls in your soup that way. So you take your challah, and you crumble it up, and you toss it into the soup. So we should have said, ain't Bishal HaHavishal, because the matzah, the challah, was baked in. So the Uraim says, no, you see from Rabbi Yosei that when you cook the matzah, it's no longer, the bishul is mevatel liafiyah, and therefore yesh bishul acharafiyah. Why are you grimacing, Ezra? So that's what the Uraim says. And there are a number of Chachmei Ashkenaz who quote this, Jimmy.
The Gemara gives a different reason for it.
Yeah, so the Rabiyah comes along, and you know, even though the Ramah still quotes it, the Rabiyah comes along and just blows the sheet at the smithereens. This Raya is almost incontrovertible Raya. Right? It's not because the Gemara gives the answer to the question. It's not because It's not because that the bishul is mevatel l'shem afia. It's because the Gemara says being in tamata. Question: what we discussed before is what does it mean tamata? On the surface, it sounds like tamata, but some rishonim say no. It doesn't mean tamata. It means this other thing. It's not matamoni. But the bottom line is the Gemara explicitly states that even Rabbi Yossi only says this din by the mitzvah afi las matzah, because you need tamata, whatever, however expansively you want to define tamata. Not because the bishul is mevatel l'shem afia. So that's what the Beis Yossi quotes this off. Anyway, the Ramah does quote this din, even in a klisheni too. So Ashkenaz isn't behaving properly, unless your soup is in a klishlishi, and that's a complicated question. Not for now. Should refrain, perhaps, until the soup has cooled down enough that it's not yatzoledes, which is like 180 degrees, before tossing their baked goods into the soup. So I don't know if the Minhag Yisrael fully follows that position. And is it sad to say, even if you don't want to say it in a Kli Rishon, you don't want to do it a Kli Sheni, it's not normally in the Vashal. I have to imagine the Rav would have permitted it, because the Rav let you make tea in a Kli Sheni. I don't, the Shefta does that also, I don't hold that personally, but I guess according to that sheet, for sure, the bread is not Kali Havishal, so all soup is going to be no more than a Kli Sheni. Right? You want to defend the Yireh?
Yeah.
Sure. You
ruin our
job. Go ahead. No, you can't do that. I'm sorry. That's a nice try, but it doesn't work. Because if I am referring to the Gemara Avi Pesach, and that suggests that the reason why some of the children stay away from the little ring of Tamatza is because Tamora we know you need. But Tamatza, it would seem, if you're Bolea Matza, then you're not, then you're Yotze. If you're Bola Mora, lo yes. I mean, if you take a piece of lettuce and you somehow swallow it without chewing it or tasting it, you're not Yotze. If you take a piece of matza and you crumble it up and then you just swallow it that way, so you're Yotze. Because you need tamar, you don't need tamasa. Not so simple, but that just means then you're going to interpret the Gemara differently. I don't think he said, I doubt you'll find the Iran saying, oh, and we reject this din because you don't need tamasa. Right? The Iran, you can't, it's wrong. You can't say, we possibly like Rabbi Yosef. And if you're going to say that you don't need tamasa, you have two choices. You either don't pass like Rabbi Yosef, or you explain that you need tamasa means something else. It's not lechem, it's not lechemoni, or something like that. In other words, the Marashach, you have to, this brisa is la halacha.
Right, but not the tzriya.
No. Then everybody, then you'd be rejecting it for other reasons. Then you'd be saying that it is indeed a machlokas hakanaim. But the Gemara rejected that.
It's not
it's not making trouble. Okay. Anyway, okay. So that's how the Rav Yoch comes along and says, you forgot the conclusion of the Gemara, which is that this is unique to the mitzvah matzah, but this doesn't apply generally. Okay. Sfardim don't have to be matzah, all the Mechaber, while he quotes it in the Beis Yosef, it's not going by the Torah, it's going to the Beis Yosef, but the Mechaber doesn't pass the Shulchan Aruch, only the Rambam brings the sheet to the Yireh. Okay. Go ahead. All right. So now what we've seen is, now the Gemara says, so the Gemara said that you read the Lohi. Okay. Did you read the Lohi? Okay, the Lohi. Okay. By the way, I'm warming to your suggestions to explain the Urain Shita. We're going to reject it, but because we passed them by. Right. Anyway. So, who's talking when it says the Lohi? How do you know that? You trust me?
Yeah.
Don't trust me. So the Rav Haigon is quoted by the Rashba, going out of his way to say that the Girsa should be Lohi. And Rashba itself thinks it doesn't make a difference, actually. There is one manuscript that has it out of it. The question is, did Rav Nachman turn around and say, did he say Vani Omer and then say the Lohi, but I'm wrong? Or is that the Gemara talking? The Pashtus is, it's the Gemara talking. That's what the Rashba says, and he thinks it doesn't matter whether the Gir says Velohi or Lohi.
Yeah.
Either way, he thinks it's not Rav Nachman talking, it's the Gemara saying Rav Nachman's whole argument is wrong. Okay, so the bottom line is we have Rav Chisda trying to make peace between the two Shikos, and Rav Nachman claiming that they're arguing, and he also tries to tie the argument to the argument of Tanoim, but the Gemara in the end rejects that link, with what they call in the Spanish classic lingo, that the Gemara rejects that tushtel, that comparison of the Machlokas Amar to Machlokas Tanoim. Okay, now what comes next? Lewis, take over, please.
Okay, we haven't read this part yet, though.
Do you have my sheet? The sheet makes it really easy.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's outlined.
Should I read off of this?
We can, either one you want. I'm just trying to make your life easier. Okay, do you recognize this machlokas? How do you recognize it? It's an Yerushalmi. This is the same machlokas in the Yerushalmi. Just they learned how to spell the Bible to hear Barabbas' name right. Okay. So.
Amar of Nachman and Bar Yitzchak. Kava Ula.
Lishabeshte.
Lishabeshte. Karevi Binyamin. Bar Yefet.
What is Shabeshte? When the Gemara talks about a brisa being either mitaretzta or mishabeshta, mistaken, right? A brisa that's mitaretzta is mituratz, it's Akkadian taratzum, means to make straight, it's yashar, whereas mishabeshta is crooked, it's broken. So the way Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, Ula was koveah his mistake on the basis of Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yefes. In other words, Ula is the one, both Rav Chisda and Rav Nachman's traditions, who quotes Rabbi Yochanan saying that Shlakos is Shahakol. And now we actually have the original speakers of Rechina Bar Abba and Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yechas quoting Rabbi Yochanan. And basically, it seems that not what Yitzchak is saying is that Ula made a mistake. He followed somehow Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yechas in terms of understanding what Rabbi Yochanan had said. So now, Tahi bar Rabbi Zeira, and this will look familiar to us, but what is Tahi bar? How would you describe Tahi? In one gesture. That's Tahi bar. Maybe we could be a little more outraged for that. But he's like, or better said, Tahi bar might be. So he's wondering, what was he thinking? The Chima. Go ahead. Okay, so the first one is Rabbi Chia Baraba. So he knew how to listen carefully in shir. He wasn't distracted by anything. He didn't fall asleep in shir. Binyamin Bar Yefes, he didn't get it so straight. Okay, that's number one. Ve'od. Aren't you so glad you're not Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yefes? Permanently incorrect. Immortalized. You guys didn't really quite get it straight. Okay. So the way Tosis explains, every 30 days, Rav Chia Bar Abba would nudge his Rebbe and to do a Chazar session and to repeat over all the stuff he had learned to make sure that he got it straight. And Rabbi Yemer Yefes, he just wanted to go on to the next sujah. Okay. Dain. Ubarmin Dain. What does that mean? Chutz Mizeh, Chutz Mizeh. The word Dain in Aramaic is Zeh or Zos. Probably Zeh. And bar means chutz. So besides this and that, I mean, besides the first two reasons, in addition, okay, so what did they do? They took this turmus, which is this lupine, which is truly an edible raw, it has toxins in it, and they were shown they get seven times in the pot, and they ate it as dessert. So if you're eating it as dessert, the kinuach suda, what do you have to do? You have to make a bracha rishona. Right? It's at the minimum, it's devarim avoyim shalom echamasa suda. Forget about the tadi. We'll deal with that when we get to the suda. So eat it b'kinuach suda. So aso. Okay. So that now, this will... since he ate Azayas Maliach, Azayas Maliach is like Mavushal, and he made a bracha before and after. So now the Gemara is going to be Midai from that. And remember, this happened in the Yerushalmi as well. The Yerushalmi didn't go the whole continuing Shaka Mataya, but the Yerushalmi quotes in that story, Rabbi Yochanan made a bracha on Azayas Maliach. So, Iyamris. Alright, so what's the logic here? The raya that Rabbi Yochanan, in other words, brought a raya that from the fact that Rabbi Yochanan ate a pickled olive, or salted olive, and he made bracha yishana bracha chona. Now, how does that tell you anything about shlakos? So the first thing you do observe immediately, which is important because it's going to be discussed by the Rishonim, what was Rabbi Yochanan eating? A what?
Single olive.
That's the Gemara later. I mentioned an olive. What's an olive? Not a trick question, should it? It is. What else is an olive? What? It's a fruit. No, it's a fruit. And it's, you know, I don't mean in the botanical sense. A tomato is a fruit, apparently, botanically also. But nobody thinks that a tomato is a fruit. Even the Reagan administration only ruled that ketchup was a vegetable, not a fruit. So it's a fruit. So what does that tell you? What should that tell you? It's why I wanted to be sure and bring it. It seems obvious. Then when we talk about shlakos, it's not only vegetables. There is a sheet that wants to say this is limited to vegetables, not to fruits. As a matter of principle. But clearly as a matter of principle, that's not correct. Now, an olive is not a fruit in the sense that we tend to think, as is the case, most fruits are? No. Most fruits in their taste are? Sweet.
Oh.
There are things that we would call fruits that are exceptions. Like avocados. And avocados and olives are the two ones that come to mind in particular, which are not sweet at all because they are unadulterated fat.
Berries,
so is quinoa. Yeah. Avocados grow on trees that don't have to regenerate each year. So we regard... I always have trouble with avocados. I have trouble with the bracha because...
Don't we consider berries fruit also?
But it's still not sweet like berries. So an avocado, I used to think that in Lidl, in the store for a while, the avocados were being listed under the, they're listed, they might be listed under vegetables actually, which is wrong, because they're fruit. What? Well, it's green and it's not sweet, and it grows in the ground, so that seems to be like what vegetable would be, right? I think they're incredible, frankly. So it would appear that, and I wouldn't recommend pickling avocados, though. Probably somebody's tried that. I have no idea. You never know what people do. Or boiling avocados. They're just good as they are. And the only thing you do with an avocado, if you don't eat it straight, is you turn it into guacamole. It's the only two things that should happen with an avocado. So, you see that fruit or the tree maybe should be treated the same way. That would be in the poshness. But right now, the way the story is quoted, we don't know what brachos he made. So, let's say Azayas that was boiled, that was pickled, that was salted, no longer is ha'etz. What bracha would you make on it? And what bracha would you make after it? Yeah. So the Gemara doesn't seem to know that. They hadn't learned Hilchos Brachos yet to know that anything you make the bar nefashos afterwards. You know the answer to that question. Why did the Gemara not know that? Because it was later. We learned the sugya at the end of the parak on that mandala days where bar nefashos first begins with flesh, and then it moves to vegetables, and then it moves even to water. That the early Amoraim didn't make, if it wasn't Shiva Saminim, of one variety or another, then they didn't make a bracha acharona.
I mean, they do mention
right here, that's going to be the answer, but you realize that has to be very late. Right? It has to be 4th or 5th generation in terms of its chronology, because the earlier Nifasi, who was Ravashi, is the one I think who made it on water. He's 6th. So probably 4th generation, they're still only making it on meat, on flesh. Okay. So...
What is the salting process for this?
What is the salting for the olive? I don't know if he means pickling. Normally pickling would be kavush. So you could probably accomplish something, I imagine, if you buried them in salt and left them there. and the salt will have some, it'll help start to affect the olive. So, in the same way that salting, heavily salting, can render meat much closer to edible. I don't know what the chemical processes are, but apparently it does. Okay, so now the Gemara makes the deal. Iamris.
So we just
did you read the whole thing? So the answer is, no. So the Gemara thought, well, obviously he made ha'eitz, because if he didn't make ha'eitz, he went to make, if it's no longer a zayis, if it's not bimil tzayhu kaime, I mean, if it's not considered still the original al, then you're not going to make an al ha'eitz on it afterwards, just as you didn't make bori pri ha'eitz before. But if you say b'shlama that zayis l'aliyach you make a bori pri ha'eitz on, I understand, you say al ha'eitz v'al pri ha'eitz, Rabbi Yochanan was baruch tzivin himself. But if you say that the salting of the olive turns it into shahako, then what bracha chorna are you going to make? And the Gemara says, maybe for the fashos. It's like, well, no. It's pretty, the truth is, from a historical vantage point, it's clear that that's not true. Rabbi Yochanan didn't make a bracha fashos after his olive. None of the stuff. He either made all the eights, or he made nothing. Rabbi Yochanan is the second generation of Yisrael, which is close to the first generation of Babel chronologically. It's almost inconceivable that that Rabbi Yochanan made a bori fashos after his olives under any circumstances, even if you had said that olives would be a yeshahakol because you salted them or pickled them. Okay. Now, one last piece that belongs with the sugya will go on, but with a tangent and then come back to shlakos more directly again. But I want to read just one more little paragraph. Masiv Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Shmuel. Okay, now firstly, do you recognize this question? Sina Yushalmi. You'll note, by the way, what has happened to this Mishnah. When you learn the Yushalmi, you probably didn't grasp what was going on because they weren't kind enough to quote for you the beginning of the Mishnah. And here they do quote for you the beginning of the Mishnah, right? Ali Rakos, Rakos Shemitz of Pesach, right? That entire beginning is missing in your comedy. That's just assuming like you know what they're talking about. Okay, which is very helpful.
No, I know.
Okay, so the Esau that I can look out tiny, call you Shlukim Amilo. Why not? If they're still the original thing. The Gemara's answer is? Okay, fine. So, how would you, if you were looking at the sugya, how many parts are there to the sugya so far? Shimmy? What are you looking at my paragraph breaks for? That's just how we read the Gemara. There aren't five sections to the sugya so far. How many sections are there?
Three.
I wouldn't even call three. You could argue. What are you three?
I
apologize, guys, because I realize I see this almost instantly, but there's no reason you haven't been trained to see this. What seems intuitive to me is not necessarily being intuitive to you. You'll see after I point it out, I think it will be kind of obvious, but Jake, do you want to examine it? I'm sorry, I thought you were raising your hand. You don't have to.
Are you going to say two?
I'll leave out the introductory material. There are two parts, which may be what you were going to say. And what are the two parts?
It's going to be...
Where does the second part begin? That's a better way of putting it. Tell me how the second part begins. If you were looking at my shoes, it's much easier to see what? Correct. Why?
Because first we have the first... the two machlokes in which the Amoraim are dealing with, and we have basically a repetition of Yerushalmi.
What's going on here? You've described it correctly. What's going on here? Why is the whole sugya repeats essentially? I mean, I know it's got different players, but like this is an NFL football where you have run two games in a row and they're all playing the same game, and they all either score touchdowns or they don't score touchdowns, and you want the final score is the same here. What's going on? Right. You look at this like, Chazara is very important. I would not undersell the importance of Chazara. All true, but that's not what's going on here. What is going on here? Right? You know, because you've probably heard this from me.
I think the answer is
I want first give the answer before you argue on me.
That they're both sort of in the same movement of pushing towards Sakazar.
No. Okay, fine. You're doing that.
Okay.
See? I didn't answer. You have a sugya that's originally comprised of the Bavli, and then you have material that comes from Eretz Yisrael later that gets incorporated whole right smack and thrown into the sugya. That's what's going on here. This happens a lot of places in Tras. Chronologically speaking, this case, it's not as glaringly obvious from the chronology, but there's a sugya, for example, in Subos, in the first paragraph, dealing with Bol be the return of the Shabbos, and how is it permissible? And you get a series of answers in Amorayim, and then all of a sudden, you go back to Rabbi Yochanan chronologically, which makes no sense. Well, the answer is because first you have the sugya from Babel, the Babylonian Amorayim by generation, and then the Eretz Yisrael material gets stuck on at the end. You'll find the same thing in the opening sugya in Beitza, about why is it that Beitza should open the Yoke of Azazel. And you have, I think, three reasons that are offered in chronological order in Babel, and all of a sudden, you get Rabbi Yochanan's Torah being brought at the end. This is actually a window into the editing and redaction of Bavli. But what you see first is the Bavli sugya, which, by the way, doesn't agree with the Yerushalmi sugya. Why doesn't it agree with the Yerushalmi sugya? I know that seems strange to say, but Jimmy?
The Bavli sugya seems to conclude that it's always a Bavli.
No. You're already going on the wrong track. What was the first thing that it said in the Yerushalmi about the issue of Shlakos? Who was quoted? No. Rabbi Shmuel was quoted as saying what? Shlakos or Shahakos. Right, the Bavli doesn't go race that. There's also interesting perspective of who should you believe. Now, you know, the Ramban in Perek Kira, in a very, very important one of the foundational machlokos called Bishul B'Shabbos in Shehiya, the Ramban in the Bavli, they have different Amorayim quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Some of them who were Babylonian Amorayim, and some of them who were, I can't use the term in Palestinian Amorayim, the scholars use them. It doesn't quite work. You don't imagine them with a fia, you know, and a suicide bomber's ass. Sorry. But I can't say Palestinian Amorayim. Eretz Yisrael Amorayim. And the Ramban argues that we should pass them, he follows this tradition of Chacham Sark, that we should pass them like the Amorayim of Eretz Yisrael Yochanan, because they probably knew better what he said, which is not an unreasonable argument for a historian to make. But one, I think, can make the very same argument that I'm more likely to trust the Bavli's, you know, rendition of Shmuel, you know, quoting Chesed or Nachman and Talmidim, than the Yerushalmi, the report that makes it Eretz Yisrael, may not be accurate. Be that as it may, that part makes no appearance in the Bavli. The Bavli has its own tradition of Rabbi Shmuel, but then you get the entire sugya essentially repeated, because you have the Torah of Eretz Yisrael being embedded into the sugya. And I think this happens many, many places in Shas. What it also does tell you is that, and this is one of the general theses that I have, I've mentioned this in passing before, I think that it is not just the memos of the Yerushalmi that reach Bavel. I think at some point the redacted, or something close to, you know, a finished version of the Yerushalmi actually reaches Bavel. The reason why this matters on some level, it's more a historical question, but it's a machlokas. I think the riff and one of the Gaonim as to whether or not the Chachmei Bavli had the Yerushalmi. The riff on the last page in Erevin writes that we pass like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. Why? Because the riff claims that the Bavli, Chachmei Bavli had the Yerushalmi, and when they rejected it, we say, Hilchasa Kevasroi. Now, I think that nobody can contest the riff is correct that we pass them like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. That's not a disputable point. The riff's reason doesn't have to be the correct reason. But the riff's, the question is the riff's assertion correct historically? And I think that while you can't prove it to every Masechta, I think there's ample evidence that the Chachmei HaBavli, that the Masadre HaBavli, had something that looks like the finished version of the Yerushalmi. They had not just the main verse, but they had the Sugyas constructed, Kenirali. And I think this is a pretty good, nothing's 100% proof, I think it's a pretty good example of that. The second point is that you see that the material is reaching Babel, at least in its current form, fairly late. It's not being integrated. There is a lot of Torah of Rabbi Yochanan, remember, throughout Shas that gets integrated into sugyos. That is not, doesn't have, this is so glaring, I think it should be out. Once I point this out to you, I would think that if you look back, it jumps off the page. Of course, like, why are we doing Chazon? Well, the answer is because this is a separate piece that's being incorporated, essentially. It's being edited, right? They expand the Mishnah, they do all sorts of things. But bottom line, this is the sugya of the Yerushalmi that has now been embedded in our sugya of Abba. Shouldn't it?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was going to ask, wait a minute, but don't they talk about Bar Rabbi Yochanan says earlier, but I guess that's just rumors. This is when we get the actual
rumors is that that's the Nachute, the Amoraim used to travel back and forth and come down to Babel, so that was the Shmur of Yochanan. We know, again, you never know whether all those things came intact properly. It's true. I don't want to call it rumors a little bit of a...
I mean, in this case, we know it didn't come intact because it's rejected in...
We think, but remember, it's Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, the Rabbi, who said it? Rabbi Nachman Mayitzchak said Ula made a boo-boo because Ula brought this din, the name Rabbi Yochanan, to Shakol, and he got confused because he took it from the wrong guy. He asked the Oisfar from the base measures as opposed to the striker guy in the base measures. Right? What did Rabbi Yochanan say? Okay, now. Okay. So now that is really what this is, I believe, is the core of the sugya. Then there are a lot of little other pieces that we have to deal with. Right.
I'm not sure I understand the calculation. This is a double sugya. Is that about the double sugya we have the tires just repeated?
No, correct.
We have three members which are all related, which are sort of one together.
You know, except that clearly, when you look at Rechista in the first sugya, already presented the... Here's a different question, Ted. Let me ask the question this way. The maskana of the Bavli, it would appear, from in the second part, is what? If you were looking just from Amar Bichir Barav until the end of that section, what, until the bottom of the page, if you're working on the printout, what is the conclusion we reach? What's the halacha? Shili?
Shlakas
Adama. That's the that you would reach. Now, Rishonim, we're going to grapple with the Quran. That is not necessarily the maskana of the Yerushalmi. What might be the maskana of the Yerushalmi? It's not entirely clear.
According to the Rashba, they're only Hadama if it was...
Miyesh v'yesh. There's no machlokas according to the maskana of Yerushalmi. Maybe not the maskana of Yerushalmi, but a way in the maskana of Yerushalmi. There's no machlokas between the Yom and Bar Yechas and Ruch Yibarava. Right? Mara no chada, mara chada no plihi. We have such a theory in Babel, that's his name is Rechista. Right? So really, one way or the other, the second part of the sugya is a little bit open-ended in terms of what Rabbi Zera just smashes Rabbi Ben Yafes and calls him a nobody and says we shouldn't pay any attention. But in which you might argue is Rabbi Nachman's position, the Machlokas Shmuel, although not Machlokas as, not Machlokas Rashi or Rabbi Yochanan, but Machlokas what Rabbi Yochanan said. But what I would say is you don't need the second sugya in principle. It doesn't really add anything to our discussion. It's also interesting, by the way, that why does the Mishnah Marah not make it into the first part, but the Mishnah Masa does? So the answer is obvious. If you stop and think about why, which is the more intuitive one to be relevant to the sugya? The Matzah or the Marah? So why doesn't Mara quoted in the Babli version? So with Fats Kasha. Right, you know? What's that? Because the whole point of quoting that Mishnah was to show there's a machlokas hatanaim, which mirrors the machlokas amarayim. There's no machlokas by Mara, there's only a machlokas by Matzah. So the only one that the Babli could have quoted, and the only one that the Rav Nachman could have quoted to say an Achlokas Shmuel has to be the Mishnah Matzah, right? It's not a perfect parallel. In fact, that's exactly what the Gemara says. The Gemara says it's not a good parallel. And by the way, Ephraim, by the way, I just want to point out, you know where I'm going here.
It's not
perfect. Okay, fine.
No, I don't know, but I meant it's not good for me.
Oh, no, it is a teretz, which is doesn't the, you know, the Gemara's answer by Mara should be satisfactory except for it's not, because the Mara wasn't baked before, so. Okay, you're okay. Think through where I was going to go with that. Okay, so now let's go on to the next part of the sugya. Ezra, can I... the other Ezra from West Hempstead is not in the room at the moment, so.
Yes.
Okay. We are on the bottom. Oh, I'm still looking at, I like the sheet. Oh, not because you don't have to. It's Amar Lei Rav Yirmiyah Le Rav Zera. How can you make a brach on Zayas Maliach? After all, Kevan.
Kevan the Shula.
Mm-hmm.
Legarina.
Yep.
Legarina. Batar
leshira. Ah, once you take away the pit of the olive, batar leshira, you don't have a shear anymore. Because an olive minus its pit is no longer a kezias. Oh, yes. But not that part of the Yishalmi. This goes back to the beginning part of the Yishalmi. And I have to say, the Yishalmi's version is so much better. When he looks at it and says, what are you looking at, Babylonian? That's so much more fun. Okay. Now, so, Amarle. Now, by the way, before. So the question was, Heichim Revoria Chazayis Baleach. So this is not part of the Sugya of Shlakos, but this is a Sugya that we have to do as we do Shlakos, or when we finish Shlakos. This is a really important question. What bracha was the Gemara saying he shouldn't have made? Man's going to bull territory here. He is a progenitor. The ravid is his progenitor here. Which bracha? He made two brachas. Chila v'sof. The Gemara says, how did he make a bracha if it wasn't a kezalis? Now, is there such a notion that you don't make a bracha rishona on something that's less than a kezalis, but you would make a bracha if it's more than a kezalis?
I don't think so.
I think so.
Well,
it's just because I took too long yesterday in shir, we didn't get there. The Gemara on Daf Yudal and Amud Aleph, which we will God willing do on Sunday in Bikiyas, says that matemes in a tzricha bracha. If you're just tasting the food, you don't require bracha. So it's a machlokas on a timing. There's a shita that says you can be matemes on a timus. Now, the way it works down, the very bridge version, which you'll hear again on Sunday, is there are two issues here. There's matemes with respect to timus, and there's matemes with respect to bracha. With respect to timus, everybody, including the Rambam, agree, you're not allowed to swallow. In fact, it may only apply on a tainus yachid, meaning your own personal tainus, not on any of the tainus that the entire tzibur is fasting. However, when it comes to eating, when it comes to tasting, not on a fast day, the question of bracha, so there's a machlokas rishonim, but the Rambam says if you have less than revius, you don't have to make a bracha. And if your purpose is not because you want to eat, but you want to just taste, right? And sometimes to get the full taste, you need to, you know, some foods you just put your mouth and you taste, but some foods you only get the full taste after you swallow. So a matemes is tasting the food to make sure that he or she, that the food is good. So less than revius doesn't require bracha. Most Rishonim say you have to spit the food out. The Rambam says you're allowed to swallow. I think the Shulchan Aruch here, I think, of course, the Psach, maybe the Rambam's Psach, I can't remember, is that Psach and Brachas Lahakal. So you wouldn't make a bracha. And of course, others will say, therefore, what you should do is to avoid something. You should have some before I make a bracha. Okay. Ronnie?
Tasting is a little different than just having a small amount.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just pointing out that the concept that you could that there's a difference between when you eat something, how much you eat, what the bracha might be, does. Even if you're just tasting the food, once you're going to have a revius, because you need to get a revius in order to pull a taste, you need to make a bracha.
What about the early suggestion that you did about
so the reason most almost cannot always show them say there are two questions to be asked here. Nobody says, as far as I know, that if you're eating something you don't have to make a bracha, even though it's less than a shear. And everybody quotes that Asana Hanaslam is every bracha, exactly what you're quoting. The question is, could a bracha change based upon what you're eating? Now, do you know of any cases where the amount you eat to change causes the bracha to change? Yes, you do. Pasta Baba Kistin, which is the kasha of the Rishonim who insists that there is no change of brachos, will ask that question. We'll talk about that when we get there. We're going to look at the Rashba and a few other Rishonim on this issue, but I don't want to explore any further now. We'll just go through the Gemara, but this is actually a crucial issue. So almost all Rishonim, if not all Rishonim, in this case say the whole question was on the bracha achrona, not on the bracha Rishonim. In other words, whether we could discuss what the bracha Rishonim will be, but it was going to be a bracha rishona no matter how much you are eating, if you are eating as opposed to tasting. But the bracha achrona, the assumption is there isn't afterwards. Now, here too, by the way, there is a shita that exists in the Rishonim that barin afashas doesn't require a shir. Tosis quotes the Judea. And therefore, I don't know if Tosis says this explicitly for this purpose, but it might very well be that if you had, let's say, less than a shir of something, that according to that shita, instead of, let's say you had only half an olive, so you can make a bartifashas. You can make a bartifashas. Okay, so anyway, so now the Gemara says, how could Rabbi Yochanan make a bracha achrona? After all, it wasn't a kazayas. I'm not letting you respond. Go ahead, Ezra. Be'inan? You don't need a jumbo zayas for the kazayas, but rather, you need an average kazayas. Okay? And the hahu.
Is it
kazayas
just a
kazayas?
No, because there's bigger and smaller olives.
Yeah.
So which olive is it?
Right. When we say if you eat a kazayas of chazir, chazir is not olive. So in its material, so you can't appeal to. So we have to have an olive. Well, olives have different sizes. And you can go to the store, you can get jumbo olives, then you can get medium olives, and you get small olives. So I will tell you, I just once did the experiment. The proof, it's not a proof, absolute proof, because we go by volume, not by weight. But I once looked at the when my wife was we were spending lots of lettuce because we were making for the family seder. That someone in the family was making. Our job was the lettuce, and my wife insisted that each person for one suga gets, which means two kazeis in the bar, got one heart of romaine lettuce. And I weighed the romaine lettuce hearts, and they were about, I think they're about 6 ounces a heart. And then I looked at the drained weight on a can of olives, of medium olives, and there were 66 olives in the drain in the can, and drained weight was about 6 ounces. So my conclusion was the idea that that one heart remained hard is only two kazesim is extraordinarily pious. So you don't use weight, you use volume. But the bottom line is that I could have found jumbo olives, I could have found small olives. So the Gemara says that the shear of when we say a kazayas, you eat a kazayas of substance X, Y, or Z, your mechayim mitzvah, your chayim malkos, whatever it is, that shear of kazayas is a kazayas beinoni. Vehahu. And now, by the way, this I put in, when I put something in italics, you know what that means? It means I'm not certain which layer it belongs to. So I choose the layer that I think it probably belongs to, but I'm acknowledging that this could be, remember, this was a dialogue between Rav Yirmi and Rav Zera. If you may ask the question, Rav Zera said to him, Misavis kazayas galdam, and kazayas beinoni beinan. Now, what is filled in here clearly is the intent of Rabbi Zeira. Whether he said this or the Gemara is filling in, I don't know for sure. By the way, one of the simonim, which is not an absolute simon, it's a pretty good simon. What's a simon that something is amoraic versus anonymous? Which won't work here, by the way. Which language does each usually speak in? The Amemers and Amoraim are usually in Hebrew, and the Stam of the Gemara is usually in Aramaic. But in this case, even the language of the Amoraim is in Aramaic, so it's hard to tell. The Bahu, anyway, whoever this belongs to, Bahu. Pashleish Shua. What does Pash means? It was left over. Right, so even that zayas they brought in for Rabbi Yochanan was a big zayas, but even though they took away the garin, pash le shira, there was nishar lo shira, there was enough there was still a kazayas. The tzan, zayas
sha'amr lo katan, ve lo gadol,
halabinoni, vizevu aguri, zayas aguri. The Gemara will explain what the term comes from. Amar Rabbi Abahu,
Amar Rabbi lo aguri shmo, ela
avruti shmo, and the next four words aren't in the Kisveyat, I believe. The Amri Lava, those who say it's not really called the Zayas Avruti, it's called the Zayas Samrusi. Now, but either way, Lama Nikra Shemo.
Lama Nikra Shemo Aguri. Shishmino.
Shishamno. Its oil is?
Agur
B'Sofa. What does Agur mean? No. Why would you translate Agur? I would say maybe accumulated. Lule ka'as oyev agur. Shot there. It means piled up. I don't know if it's like waiting. Agur b'sofer is like lule ka'as oyev agur. This is a complicated route. It goes in a lot of different directions. Doesn't matter for our purposes. See what I mean?
The way they're talking about
lule
veshma,
lule veshma,
it's like this is like someone from a Tanakhni figure.
I don't know. They just want it to be accurate. Fine. So this obviously can be compared to the Yerushalmi, and we have a very big problem, which is what? We won't say anything more about that, but there's one. What is the difference between this and its parallel passage in the Yerushalmi? What's missing, Lewis?
Well,
and you're telling me that Rabbi Yochanan rejects that opinion that he said the shear doesn't require the
Beria. He says that the Yerushalmi says that he didn't need a shear, not because there was a shear, not because it was a big olive, but because it was a beria. All right, so that has to be spoken about because that matters very much. Halacha l'maaseh, is there a chashash of beria? Okay. Continue. You get another little piece. Okay. Now here I did something against my better instincts. Mema ketanai means.
There's also another.
No. No, that would be Ketanoi. What is Neima Ketanoi? Whenever the Gemara says Neima Ketanoi, which is a question, should we say that this Machlokas Amaram is paralleled by Machlokas Hatanaim? The answer always is no. If the Gemara says Leima or Neima Ketanoi, the answer is no. If it really is Ketanoi, the Gemara will just say Ketanoi. That's just that's your tip off. The Gemara is telegraphing for you where it's going. It's going to present something that looks like it should be a nice parallel, and then it's going to say, no, but it's not a good parallel. Now, what's very odd about this, I left this all in Tanaic font, is these should not appear to be Tanaic. Who was Barthanoi? There is one manuscript, I think, that doesn't have Neiman Tanaic. It just leaves the words out, but all the others do. And one of the Rishonim also comments about not being Goris Neiman Tanaic, because these aren't really Tanaic. Who was Barthanoi? He's a Talmud of Rebbe. But there's another thing to know about Bar Kapara, which is that he has his own, like, version of the Mishnayos. Rebbe had Talmidim who had their own versions. You will see, you'll see Tani Bar Kapara. Levi was another one. Levi was amending his version of the Mishnah. You learn the first parak in Yevamos. And you learn the two opening Mishnayos, the big Mishnah, and then the 15, and then the 6, anybody who's done Yevamos. So Levi amended certain things in his Mishnah. Right? But that happens elsewhere in Shas as well. He was a Talmud of Rebbe. So that may be why the Gemara treats him as a Tana. And therefore his students are also Tanoi, and his students are arguing as opposed to what you're supposed to do. Okay, so let's see, what is the Tanoi? So that's why I put it all in Tana in a Klan, but they're not really Tanoi. They're more like Amorai. So go ahead. Name like a Tanoi.
They were all sitting.
Yes, and the Yerushalmi version, which I didn't give you, it's not in the Sugya. It appears like the whole base of Edrash is there. It's not just, this sounds like it's Bar Kapara and two students.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
Have you ever found a Krum?
Dormaskin?
Dormaskin?
Upragir. What is Krum? We said is cabbage. What is Dormaskin?
Isn't Krum carrot?
No. Krum is cabbage. I don't know if there is. I don't know where carrots originated from, if they went out to Israel.
No carrot.
Oh, carob. No. That's charuv with a ches. And that's a tree. That's those awful buxer that they used to give us a live bomber. Okay. All right. So, did you get buxer? That's kind of seems like a Chabad thing to do. I know you didn't go to a fancy school, but okay. Fine. So that's charuv with a ches. So what are durmaskin? No, not plums. Prunes.
Well, except prunes in French means plums.
Okay, fine. And then plums. And Tosis doesn't like that. But it's some other vegetable, I think. I think Rashi rejects that.
Yeah, he rejects it.
Yeah. It's some other vegetable. And then, finally, pargios are? You got it. Buffalo wings, or some kind of chicken. Okay, that retains its, that's an old word. It's still used, right? Pargiot. But that's a very old word. All right. So, they brought basically two kinds of vegetables and pargios. Because obviously it was eating keto. All right? Because there was no lechem, there was none of that. So, what happens? Okay. And the moral of this story, by the way, is that if we're eating in shir and I offer one of you to make the bracha, what do you do? Run and hide, okay? What?
The trap.
Well, no. I only trap you ask the question. If you don't want to run and hide, don't make that bracha without asking the shayla. Okay. I'm not Bar Kapara, by the way, in case anybody would have been unlikely confusing it.
Lechem,
then
it's pretty clear
it's
supposed to be around.
That's
well.
Not, it's clear in my presence of lechem, you're not supposed to be eating it. So, anyway, what happens? Kafat.
Kafat's ubirat al pargio.
So it's very strange. Why is kafat ubirat al pargio?
It's very easy.
He gave him Rishus Lavarech.
Right.
No, my question is, he gave him Rishus Lavarech.
Yeah,
so why is Kapat Lulim? Kapat normally means everybody's sitting there, and what guy, who's the chazir, he goes and grabs and makes the bracha. Right, that Kapat, please, will you honor us with the bracha? And now you go make the bracha. Kapat Udire. Okay. Anyway, he didn't ask the question as he should have asked. He made a bracha on the chicken wings. And what happened? Ligleg Amad Chavera. Ligleg, he mocked him. Okay. Kaasbar
kapara. Amar lo.
Lo alam avarech.
Ani kois. Ella alhamdulillah.
He wasn't angry at the guy who made the bracha. He was angry at his chaver for making fun of him. Im
chavereha domeh kimi shalotam
tam basameolam. Kimi shalotam tam basameolam. If he feels like he hasn't had meat forever,
ata alnal
regale. Biglat alma. In other words, what's clear from the story is that the Malagleg thought he made the bracha on the wrong thing first. So he said. So Bar Kapara said, what are you mocking him for? Chazav Yomar.
Chazav Yomar, lo al ha-Malagleg, ani kois, el al ha-Malagleg.
I'm not angry at the Malagleg. He was justified in being Malagleg. I'm angry at the Mavarech. Va'amar.
Va'amar, in chokma, in kan.
At the very least, there's someone older here who you should ask this before you do. You should have asked me what to do. Of course, the Gemara adds on, as the Kai, the Bryce adds on, Tana. Yes, neither of them lived out their year. Okay. That was my point, Boaz. Is that what I asked you to make a brother?
He asked him to make a brother.
Right, so when you read the Yerushalmi story, it sounds like he wasn't invited exactly quite that way. I think you have to say in the Bavli that what happened was he might make the bracha, but he figured he had the seichel and said, "Okay, but Rebbe, what should I make the bracha on?" And he just jumped to conclusions. We might say, "Kafat zubira." He jumped to conclusions. Okay. What?
Yeah, you're not testing them.
No.
Trying to eat.
No.
You do the right thing
and ask the question. And instead, he jumped to conclusions. Any of you know the Phantom Tolbooth?
Yes.
Okay. Isn't there something there about jumping to conclusions?
Yeah,
okay. I said it. It came to mind. Okay. So anyway, it's a gavaldi the book. So now the Gemara gets down to the substance of the issue. My love, Jake, take over. Save your cover, sir. You're fine. Fine, sir. Right, the Mevarech thought that it was the same bracha and everything, and therefore he just chose that was most what he liked the most. And that is a rule that this is opening, by the way, another can of worms, not a problem we're going to have to deal with, is kedima and brachos. So there are two kinds of kedima and brachos we have to talk about. One is when you have two foods with different brachos, and the second is when you have two foods with the same bracha. In the case of the first situation, it's which bracha do you make first? In the case of the second situation, it's which food gets the bracha. So the Mevarech thought that everything was the same bracha, meaning Shlakos is Shahakol, the Krov and the Dermaskin are Shahakol, and therefore he made the bracha on the food that he liked the most, which in effect was what Bar Kapara said. It's like he had never tasted meat before. He was so hungry for meat. That was Chavit to him. And then, Umalagweg Savar. Right. In other words, if you have dama and shahako, you're supposed to make a dama first, which is true, by the way. Why? Because generally in brachos, a bracha that's more specific is more chashav. So you're supposed to make the more chashav bracha first. So that's the Gemara suggests that the machlokus and the mevarech and the malagleg was about this issue. Unfortunately, we can never get full, true historical clarification because they're both dead. But the Gemara now, in its Kedarka Bakodesh, says the Gemara's not really interested in the mevarech and the malagleg. Gemara once says, no, lo. Vizayon. So one sheet that says, the brachas are all the same. So the only issue that was involved is which food's going to get the bracha. So the Mevarech thought that it's whatever I like the most. And the Malagmig said no, because Kruv is inherently more significant because it's Zion. Again, Shani, we have the same issue at the end of the paragraph. We don't know why, but somehow cabbage was seen as being possible as a person's main meal. We did this cheshbon already once in Shir, calculating how many calories are in a certain weight of cabbage, and the conclusion we reached, I think, was to have anything meaningful in a meal, you'd have to eat an entire head of cabbage, and that wouldn't be a full day's calories, that would just like barely make a meal, and I think, and we are not even going to experiment on that in the food testing. Nobody can step forward. It's not Hila Gas is prohibited. Okay, so we're going to stop here right now. Tomorrow, we will. I'm going to send you some, of course, but first I want you to, those who didn't get this far, finish this far, finish the sugya. But I think that, I encourage you to use this. I gave you this for a reason. Not because I think you can't read the Gemara, but it makes it easy to see the sugya laid out, each particular piece. And so we will resume tomorrow to finish that and then start to talk about the question of when Lemaisa, what is the maskana for Gemara actually? When do you make shakel? When do you make a barik?